Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 287, titled Don't Put Your Foot in Your Mouth When Talking About Mad Cow Disease, and That's No Bull. This is being recorded on April 7th of the year 2001. We've been talking about foot and mouth disease and the various impacts or the areas of impact that that disease has had, ranging from promoting anti-Chinese xenophobia in the United Kingdom to perhaps spurring changes in EU agricultural policy, a massive boon for companies that manufacture the foot and mouth vaccine. The United Kingdom's elections have already been postponed. And let me stress again that For the Record 287 is in interrogatory mode. I have more questions than answers about the outbreaks of foot and mouth and mad cow disease. This entire broadcast is in the category of what I call food for thought and grounds for further research, and once again, forgive the dreadful pun under the circumstances. We're going to begin by reviewing an element from the tail end of Side A of For the Record Program 287. This is from the Financial Times of London of Friday, March 2nd of the year 2001, excerpting a report by their international staff headlined, Missiles and Viruses Still Trouble Experts, and it's about a UN inspection of Iraq and a report on their weapons of mass destruction. Skipping down, Iraq's research into viruses, including foot and mouth disease, was also worrying, and I'm excerpting that slightly. So note that according to the United Nations, Iraq has been doing research into foot and mouth disease. Note that the strain that has now broken out is one that was believed to have come from an illegal shipment of meat and is a strain that is prevalent in South Asia and in the Middle East. We're going to review some elements that we talked about in For the Record program number 87, Uncle Sam and the Swastika Redux. This is a book called The Death Lobby. This is excerpted from a book called The Death Lobby, subtitled How the West Armed Iraq. It's by Kenneth R. Timmerman, published in hardcover by Houghton Mifflin, and the book is copyrighted 1991. The ISBN number is 0-395-59305. And we're going to begin by taking a look at some of the political heritage of the regime of Saddam Hussein. We've noted in particular in connection with our discussions with the brilliant Kevin Coogan, author of the book Dreamer of the Day, subtitled Francis Parker Yockey and the Postwar Fascist International, that Iraq was one of a number of countries that was the focal point of a pro-Axis uprising during the Second World War. The uprising in Iraq was led by Ali Rashid, and the goal by this German-allied nationalist movement was to oust the British from the Middle East. The pro-Axis and anti-British activism in Iraq spawned one of the major influences on Saddam Hussein, which was his maternal uncle, Khairallah al-Tufah. Turning now to The Death Lobby by Kenneth R. Timmerman, and this, by the way, was also discussed in For the Record program number 87, speaking of Saddam Hussein, at 10, he found a mentor in his maternal uncle, Khairallah al-Tufah, a recently cashiered army officer whose hatred of British colonial rule was matched only by his admiration for Adolf Hitler and his Nazi ideals. Saddam turned to his uncle at least in part because of problems at home. His father had deserted the family when Saddam was a young child, and his mother's second husband, an illiterate shepherd named Ibrahim Hassan, beat the boy whenever he refused to tend the sheep. When he was 12, Saddam took refuge in his uncle Khairallah's house. He learned to read by the light of an oil lamp and fed his spirit on his uncle's tales of exploits with pro-German officers in the Iraqi army. Khairallah al-Tufah had a dream that Arabs would one day be free of foreign occupation and foreign rule. The Germans, Khairallah said, were the only ones who respected the Arabs as equals. The British were just after their oil. And obviously the advent of the State of Israel further inflamed pan-Arabist sentiment. As we noted in For the Record program number 87, the Ba'ath Party was strongly influenced by the Nazi Party in Germany and had a xenophobic nationalist and pan-Arabist and obviously, among other things, anti-British and anti-Israeli ideology at its foundation. Note also the pro-German and anti-British sentiment of Khairallah al-Tufah, who became a major force within the Iraqi Ba'ath Party. Khairallah al-Tufah was the fellow who raised Saddam Hussein, and later, when Saddam Hussein turned to bacteriological weaponry and viral weaponry as a possible source of war-making potential, note that Khairallah al-Tufah became one of the officials centrally involved with the development of the Iraqi bacteriological warfare capability. And note also that the Iraqi purchasing agency that was in charge with purchasing bacteriological and virological agents was called the General Directorate of Veterinary Services, whether or not there is any direct connection between that and the UN-reported development of foot and mouth disease by Iraq. And I would note that the outbreak in Britain took place after the United States and Britain bombed Iraq following the ascension of George Bush. Note also that at least so far, Germany has escaped foot and mouth disease. Turning once again to the death lobby by Kenneth R. Timmerman, Saddam Hussein was attracted early on to bacteriological weapons. They were cheap, relatively simple to manufacture, and potentially deadly. A single vial of anthrax virus dropped in an urban water system was enough in certain conditions to launch a full-scale epidemic. It was a terrorist's weapon if ever there was one. Iraq's first attempt to acquire biological weapons of this kind seemed innocent enough. The committee turned to a trusted Ba'athist, Izzat al-Dhuri, then serving on the ruling Revolutionary Council as Minister of Agriculture. On November 2, 1974, al-Dhuri signed a contract with the Paris-based Institut Mérieux to set up Iraq's first bacteriological laboratory. The Iraqis explained that they needed to be able to manufacture large quantities of vaccines in order to develop agricultural and animal production. The official Iraqi purchasing agency was called the General Directorate of Veterinary Services. Skipping down, al-Dhuri's success won him a promotion and made him a de facto member of the team, the three-man strategic planning committee, along with Saddam himself, Khairallah al-Tufah, and Adnan Habdani. By the end of the year, he was shifted to the Ministry of the Interior, all the while retaining his responsibilities for, quote, agricultural, unquote, development. And in addition to the fact that the Veterinary Services, the Department of Veterinary Services, or Directorate of Veterinary Services, was the cover for Saddam's bacteriological and virological warfare program, and that Khairallah al-Tufah, his Third Reich-influenced uncle, was heavily involved with that. Note also that the German defense industry was centrally involved with the arming of Iraq, as, by the way, was the United States under George Bush and Ronald Reagan. Turning once again to the death lobby. Like most European nations, West Germany was dependent on Gulf oil and had bartered technology for oil with the Arab world and Iran. 35 years after the Holocaust, the West Germans were willing to sell technology that would allow Iraq to manufacture poison gas, ballistic missiles, and even nuclear weapons. But West German law prohibited the export of arms. The very existence of a weapons industry in West Germany was a closely guarded secret all through the 1950s and 1960s. As the years went by, most of the same technology concerns that had helped build Hitler's Third Reich were born again from the ashes of World War II. One of the largest firms was the aircraft maker Messerschmitt Bolkow Blohm, or MBB. By the late 1970s, MBB had become a premier manufacturer of combat helicopters and tactical missiles. MBB, observing the enormous amounts of money Iraq was spending on weapons, wondered why the French and Soviets should reap all the rewards just because of the scruples of the West German Parliament, which forbade arms sales. And of course, MBB, like the Thyssen heavy industrial complex that we've looked at in connection with the rise of Hitler, with the Bormann Group, an organization heavily involved with the Bush family, Thyssen AG was deeply involved in Iraq as well. I would note also that Dieter Vogel, the head of Thyssen AG, was a protege of Reinhard Mohn, the key fellow involved, the patriarch of the Bertelsmann firm, about which we've spoken so many times. More about the German role, along with the United States, in the development of the Iraqi weapons industry. Turning once again to the death lobby by Kenneth Timmerman. After the earlier rebuffs from the United States and Britain, al-Sadi knew exactly where to turn to find willing partners for Iraq's most momentous enterprise, West Germany. 35 years after the Holocaust, many West Germans were still ready and willing to help Iraq learn, quote, how this knowledge can be used to destroy Israel, unquote. One of them was a German trader named Anton Eierle, capital E-Y-E-R-L-E, who headed the Rhine-Bavaria Vehicle Construction Company. For Eierle, who was 57 when he started working for Iraq, Saddam Hussein was a strong man for whom it is worth fighting, unquote. The Iraqis were people who still have character, unquote. In his office in Kaufbeuren, Bavaria, Eierle still kept a people's receiver, a radio console popular during the Third Reich. He had it fixed so that he could play Hitler's booming speeches as if they were just being broadcast, as he had heard them 35 years earlier. Eierle had served in Hermann Göring's Luftwaffe, and in an interview with the West German news weekly Der Spiegel, he explained his enthusiasm for Iraq and the Iraqi dictator, quote, this is as it was in my youth, he said. Saddam's men would find other partners in West Germany's chemicals, electronics, and military establishments. Over the next 10 years, Germans worked shoulder to shoulder with Iraqi chemists, ballistics engineers, and nuclear scientists to develop one of the most diversified arsenals of unconventional weapons found anywhere in the world. Senator Jesse Helms, whose staff assistant spent months tracking them down, called these companies and their cohorts Saddam's Foreign Legion, unquote. Again, noting the anti-British orientation of Saddam and his uncle Khairallah al-Tufah, involved with the Directorate of Veterinary Services, or Department of Veterinary Services, as the Iraqi Biological Weapons Program was called initially, and noting also that the German National Security Establishment, or the German weapons industry, was heavily involved with the Iraqi Bacteriological Weapons Program. Whether or not there is any connection between the UN-reported development by the Iraqis of foot and mouth disease, the joint American and British attacks on Iraq, and the sudden outbreak of foot and mouth disease in Iraq, with all of the, or in the United Kingdom, I should say, with all of the implications that that has. We're going to switch now to another, or the other disease that we've been focusing on in this discussion. And again, this broadcast is titled, Don't Put Your Foot in Your Mouth When Talking About Mad Cow Disease, and That's No Bull. And we're going to talk about mad cow disease right now. And I think, frankly, that an awful lot of what we've been told about mad cow disease is bull. We're going to turn now to the Los Angeles Times of Thursday, March 22nd of the year 2001, and I would note that even though officially we are not being told about mad cow disease in the United States, I would view that as at least possibly bull. Again, L.A. Times of Thursday, March 22nd of 2001, an article by Stephanie Simon of the L.A. Times headlined, U.S. confiscates sheep suspected of carrying mad cow disease, and this article reads in part as follows. Federal officials on Wednesday seized a Vermont farmer's flock of sheep over suspicions that some of the animals may be infected with mad cow disease and could pose a threat to livestock nationwide. It was the first time that the U.S. government has confiscated livestock as a precaution against mad cow disease. Skipping down, it will take at least 2 years and possibly much longer before pathologists can determine for sure whether the animals harbor mad cow disease or a related illness, scrapie, S-C-R-A-P-I-E, that is relatively common in sheep and cannot be transmitted to humans. I would note that one of the believed causes of mad cow disease, or the cause, or a cause, is the feeding of sheep brains to cows. Also, the feeding of cows with brain parts in it to other cows, which, by the way, is in and of itself completely insane. Cows are herbivores, and why the hell anybody would feed them sheep or cows, brains or otherwise, is, I guess one could say, food for thought and grounds for further research. And again, forgive the dreadful pun. Again, note that scrapie is a disease of sheep. I would note in evaluating both mad cow and foot and mouth disease that it is causing widespread unrest. At least with regard to foot and mouth disease, there has been a drastic increase in security procedures in the United States and elsewhere. It also has increased tensions between civilians and their governments, both in the United States and elsewhere. People were giving the Hitler salute when those sheep in Vermont were being taken away for slaughter. We're going to turn now for a little bit of background on Scrapie. We're going to turn now to a book that we've used many times in the past. This book is called Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Accident, or Intentional, authored by Dr. Leonard G. Horowitz, published in hardcover by Tetrahedron Incorporated, and copyrighted 1996. The ISBN number is 0-923550-12-7. I've done many programs with Dr. Leonard Horowitz. This book, Emerging Viruses, I think is one of the most important books ever written. However, I would note, and this is not to speak against Dr. Horowitz, whom I like and respect, but this should not be in any way endorsed as or interpreted as an endorsement of some of his subsequent work, for which, frankly, I have no use, in particular, one of his more recent books. However, that notwithstanding, I think Emerging Viruses is one of the most important books ever written, and we've used this in the past. Now, in one of the earlier sections of Emerging Viruses, there's discussion of World Health Organization and also Center for Disease Control and National Institute of Health Research into Scrapie, among other diseases. And again, that was a slowly developing neurological disease in sheep. I would note that as we looked at in many of our discussions, including RFA-16 and some of our discussions with Len Horowitz, the National Cancer Institute, a subdivision of the National Institute of Health, appears to have been centrally involved in the research that culminated in the development of AIDS and in all likelihood the man-made creation of AIDS and probably its deliberate dissemination as well. Speaking of research by the World Health Organization as well as the CDC and NIH, into Scrapie, among other diseases, Len Horowitz writes in Emerging Viruses. By the way, the culprit in Scrapie appears to be a prion, which is not a virus, but a particular type of protein. Turning to Emerging Viruses of Scrapie and research into that, among the tens of thousands of viral strains cultured, developed, and transported for study by WHO reference centers, we learned that two received special attention and an inordinate share of research dollars: monkey viruses, including the simian pox virus, and the slow viruses, particularly Visna and Scrapie. We read these reports carefully since Dr. Strecker noted that the AIDS virus bears the greatest likeness to the human human AIDS virus. Skipping down. Alternately, slow viruses were at least slow viruses were of the greatest interest to World Health Organization, Center for Disease Control, National Institute of Health, and National Cancer Institute scientists between 1968 and 1974. The reasons for this were not as obvious. The World Health Organization Chronicle reported, quote, "Recent interest in the slow viruses, in particular those causing chronic degenerative disease of the nervous system, the China, all in capitals, chronic infectious neuropathic agents viruses, has come from painstaking work with Visna and Scrapie, degenerative diseases of the central nervous system of sheep, and Kuru, a degenerative disease of the central nervous system of man restricted to the Foray people of New Guinea and their immediate neighbors," unquote. Why so much interest in two sheep viruses that cause nerve disorders and don't infect humans? Jackie asked. I would add that right now, mad cow disease or its human variant, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, or CJD, is in fact infecting humans after sheep were fed to cows, which were fed to people. Skipping down in Emerging Viruses, more about Scrapie and its speculative application to biological warfare. We read on. China, and again that's all in capitals, China viruses, and that's not has nothing to do with the nation China, that's an acronym, China viruses are distinguished by the languishing character of the infection process they initiate. The incubation period in the host may be months or years, and the disease itself may progress laggardly towards an irreversible deterioration of the victim. Cells infected with slow viruses are in general neither impaired nor stimulated to proliferate. Their functions are impaired, but the nature of the dysfunction has not as yet been clarified, unquote. It's, quote, "It's remarkable how closely this matches several of the most prominent features of AIDS," I said. "And there's more," continuing with the report that they were reading. "The resistance of the scrapie agent to heat, ether, formalin, and other enzymatic and chemical agents, as well as its very small particle size, poses the question whether it is a conventional virus, an incomplete virus, or some other agent. The findings of different research groups are at variance and in several instances are totally inexplicable within our present concept of infectious agents," unquote. That reads just like the Department of Defense order for a new infective microorganism, unquote, that couldn't be defended against, I remarked, and skipping down. "What I don't understand is here, the World Health Organization Chronicle stated the primary objective of their viral research program was, quote, to acquire a thorough knowledge of the virus diseases so that prophylactic and other public health measures can be introduced as soon as possible," unquote. What's the matter with that? Look at what they were studying to accomplish it. Two rare diseases that affect only sheep, and one totally remote virus that makes brain eaters laugh themselves to death, unquote. Do you think they might have been looking at these things for use as biological weapons, Jackie asked, and then added, quote, "Think about it. Scrapie, a totally unconventional germ that they're not even sure what it is. You can't kill it with heat or chemicals, and there are, quote, still no tissue culture systems or antibody systems by which enemy defenses could be prepared," unquote. And note that sheep in Vermont have just been confiscated for possible infection with scrapie, and that scrapie-infected sheep, or affected sheep, fed to cows, appears to have led to the Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease or mad cow disease, which is now definitely affecting humans. And it may now be affecting humans in the United States, too. Note the following. This is from the Los Angeles Times of Saturday, March 24th of the year 2001. This is an AP story, Dateline Denver, headlined, "Two Colorado deaths are likened to mad cow." Two patients have died at a Colorado hospital this year from Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, an illness similar to mad cow disease, and there is concern other patients may have been exposed, a hospital spokesman said Friday. The patients, both over 60, died in January and February at Exempla St. Joseph Hospital, said Steve Crisman, a spokesman for Kaiser Permanente. Hospital spokeswoman Kathleen Ferguson said at least six other patients may have been exposed to Creutzfeldt-Jakob through surgical instruments used while treating one of the two who died. The instruments were sterilized after each use, but no studies have been done to show whether sterilization procedures are effective against the proteins that cause the disease, said Dr. Kathy Van Blerkom, B-L-E-R-K-O-M, chair of the hospital's Department of Pathology and Infection Control. There are a lot of unknowns in this disease, unquote, she said. Yes, indeed, says Dave Emery, there are indeed a lot of unknowns in this disease. I would note that there are two reported deaths of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Mad cow has been reported to be infecting sheep near a chemical warfare facility in Colorado, and there's been speculation about organophosphates and its possible role in mad cow disease. So I would note, too, the article which talks about the possibility that other patients may have been exposed from surgical instruments. This disease is supposed to take 10 to 16 years to develop. I wonder about that, and I wonder whether perhaps we're being prepared for mad cow outbreaks in this country, supposedly from surgical instruments. Again, this entire consideration is one about which I have many more questions than answers. And consider the following, particularly in terms of the possibility of mad cow disease and biological warfare. The following was researched for us by a member of the listening audience. This comes from the Yorkshire Post's issue of March 30th of the year 2001. This is an article by Mike Waits, the health correspondent of the Yorkshire Post. It's headlined, "Puzzled scientists try to explain regional variation in figures. Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease cases in north, double toll in south." This article reads in part as follows. Scientists have confirmed that cases of the human form of mad cow disease in the north are running at double the rate in the south. A study published in today's medical journal Lancet looked at 84 cases of variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which has so far claimed 10 victims in the Yorkshire region. The researchers found it was twice as common in the north of England and Scotland, but were at a loss to explain the difference after finding no clear link with regional differences in eating habits. Work is to continue on examining possible causes which could indicate a transmission route for the infectious agent. A report on a cluster of 5 cases in Leicestershire last week blamed abattoir and butchering practices which led to contamination of meat by infected tissue. The work is expected to lead to efforts to find other parts of the country where the techniques were commonly used. The latest study compared where people had lived with data on diet in the 1980s, particularly the consumption of meat and meat products. Skipping down, Simon Cousins of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, which carried out the research with the National CJD Surveillance Unit in Edinburgh, said there was no apparent cause for the north-south divide, which first became apparent last year in an initial examination of 52 cases. Quote, "We had difficulty determining whether regional variations in diet might cause these differences, since the results of dietary analyses were inconsistent," unquote, he said. Again quoting, "Given the recent findings from Leicestershire, we would ideally like to know not just what people ate, but how it was prepared in the abattoir and butcher's shop. It could be these practices were more common in some parts of the country than others." Quote, "We also," and this is the real pièce de résistance here, and again, no pun intended, but listen to this, quote, "We also need to keep an open mind about other factors unrelated to diet," unquote. "These could include the genetic background of victims. All those who developed the disease had a specific genetic makeup, and it could be that people in the north are more genetically susceptible than in other places." So the possibility of genetic engineering here and possible biological warfare experimentation is not one that I would altogether rule out. But again, I have more questions than answers. But again, note that particular Yorkshire Post article from March 30th speculating about genetic differences in the north-south divide in the United Kingdom. In connection with mad cow disease, I would also call to mind the cattle mutilations in the United States in the 1970s, although dismissed as scavengers or predators or crackpots as the work of aliens. One wonders about the possibility of experimentation of some kind, or whether the spread of mad cow was already being noted, and whether herds were being tested in the United States for the spread of mad cow disease. And again, that's what I call food for thought or grounds for further research. This wraps up the main part of Side 2 of For the Record Program number 287. There will be a detailed and annotated description of For the Record 287 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website when this program goes out to the stations that carry the broadcast. The Spitfire website can be accessed at www.spitfirelist.com, and there are real audio archives of the For the Record programs being put together by sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. Recent programs can be accessed on their website at wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word, DaveEmory. And older For the Record programs can be accessed at http://archive.wfmu.org/archive/capital D capital X/. This concludes For the Record program number 287, side 2. This is titled, "Don't Put Your Foot in Your Mouth When Talking About Mad Cow Disease, and That's No Bull." This is being recorded on April 7th of the year 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.